Radio 4, the time now 5 minutes past three. Afternoon theatre.
When my rich Aunt Catherine summoned you to see her, you had to obey. She tyrannized over her entire family. From the highest, as represented by Terence, her beloved brother, to the lowest, as represented by her second husband, Hannibal, and myself. So, when I got her telegram that Friday morning in the summer of 1929, ordering me to set off that very night to spend the weekend with her, I cancelled my other plans and caught the 8:17 from Paddington. After all, having failed at almost everything I'd attempted in my 26 years of life, I had no wish to fail at the important task of being the favorite nephew of an aunt worth, at a conservative estimate, at least half a million. As the train got closer and closer to Macebury, I prepared myself for a long weekend of business and pleasure. An ingredient I was not prepared for was murder.
We present Death of My Aunt, a play for radio by Francis King, adapted from the novel by C.H.B. Kitchin, with David Griffin as Malcolm and John Shrapnel as Uncle Hannibal. Death of My Aunt.
Hello, Malcolm.
Hello, Uncle Hannibal.
Jolly decent of you to come at such short notice. Oh, Dace, take Mr. Warren's bag upstairs, will you, and unpack it.
Righto.
We won't be needing the car again this evening.
Very good, sir.
A new face, isn't it?
Who, Dace? He's been with us for some months. But of course, it's a long time since you last paid us a visit. Yes, a new face and a not particularly amiable one. But your aunt thinks the world of him. It's odd, you know, that's how she and I first met each other. I used to drive her myself when I hadn't a man free at the garage. That was just after your Uncle Morris's death, of course. Now, sit down and let me get you a spot of whiskey before we turn in.
Thanks. How is Aunt Catherine?
Oh, she's really very well. There. That about right for you?
It looks awfully strong.
Nonsense, you're a big boy now. Cheers.
Cheers.
Yes, I'm sorry about asking you to come at such short notice, but when your aunt gets some idea into her head, well, I don't have to tell you. It's about her investments, of course.
Her investments? Oh, was that it? Well, I'm not a partner in the firm, you know. Far from
it. Dear boy, she was struck by that paper you sent her. She said it showed you'd inherited the family flair for money. She doesn't think very much of my money-making abilities.
No, I'm sure she's wrong.
Well, when something has to be done, she likes it done at once, you know that. Quite what it is, if anything, that she wants done now, I just do not know. You'd be surprised how little I know about her affairs. Well, maybe she's going in for a big gamble of some kind.
Well, it won't matter whether she wants me to do anything or not. I'm very glad to be here. I'll leave it to her to start the subject, shall I?
Oh, as a matter of fact, Malcolm, she thinks you're going to look at the investment book straight away tonight.
Tonight?
Well, we expected you a bit earlier, you see, and she got quite worked up. Do you think he'll be here by dinner time? She kept asking me, as though I knew the answer. In the end, I got her off to bed, but she was so sure you'd want to work just as soon as you got here that she asked me to hand you this letter. Where is it? Oh, yes, I put it in this pocket. Yeah.
It's sealed.
Yes, she sealed it. She often does seal letters she asks me to deliver for her. I've no idea at all what's in it. It feels like a key. Yeah, it's probably the key to her bureau. The fact is, Malcolm, that I'm not exactly in her confidence. I haven't been for a long, long time. I don't like admitting that, but it's not surprising. After all, no use blinking at matters. I am a bit of an intruder here. And your relations aren't all too eager to see me settling down. At first, I thought we'd all be good pals, but just lately, well, I don't know.
Oh, I'm sure you're mistaken, Uncle Hannibal.
Well, you've always treated me very well. And your mother, too. But your Uncle Terence never took to me, did he? I don't blame him, mind you. Cultured man, first-class education, boss of an important firm of solicitors. Anne's different. But then she only married him. She's not one of the high and mighty Carville family by birth. As for that son of theirs...
Don't you and Bob hit it off?
He used to see the way he looks at me, as though I were some unsavory criminal whose case he had to handle, even though he knew that he was guilty.
He's always looked like that at me, too. Oh, it's just his solicitor's manner. I suppose I'll have to go over and see them tomorrow.
Well, you won't find your Uncle Terence there. He's been away fishing for the last week in Wales.
And Aunt Anne?
Oh, she's at home, poor woman.
Poor woman?
Ah, yes, I suppose you haven't heard. That son-in-law of hers, James, he's got himself into some kind of financial scrape again. Anne got a wire from Augusta in Rome yesterday, and there've been two, well, perhaps even three telegrams before that. She seems to want her mother to go over. But, of course, that's out of the question, things being as they are.
Why?
Well, firstly, Terence is against it. And then Anne's been far from well, you know. As a matter of fact, she went to town today to see some Harley Street quack.
Oh, she's always worrying about her health. Poor Aunt Anne.
Yes. Well, I expect you want to take a deco at your aunt's letter. And I dare say that in any case you're fagged after the week's work and the journey. Would you like to go up?
Yes, I suppose it is getting late.
Damn. What an hour to ring.
Hello. Oh. Hello. Yes, she's fine, thanks. Fine. Had dinner in her boudoir. I've got Malcolm here with me. Malcolm. Yes. Yes, I'll tell her. Thank you. Good night.
Who was that?
Oh, that old busybody, Maria Hall.
Maria Hall? Who's she?
You know, the vicar's wife. You've met her, I'm sure.
What does she want, ringing up at this hour?
Well, she had tea with your aunt yesterday, and she seems to have, to have got scared about her health. Don't ask me why.
Well, there you are, the bachelor's room. Not too uncomfortable, I hope. If you need anything in the night, I'm in the end room of all.
The end room? But I thought...
Oh, your aunt's turned me out of there. Made the dressing room into her boudoir now. Well, that's how it goes.
My first act, as soon as I had shut the door behind me, was to tear open my aunt's letter to see what she had to say.
My dear nephew Malcolm, I've decided to wait up no longer for you. Here is the key of my bureau in the boudoir, the room next to yours, so that you can look at my investment book before you go to sleep. You will find the book lying on top of the blotter. Come and see me after breakfast without fail. Your affectionate Aunt Catherine. P.S. You will, of course, understand that I do not wish my investment book shown to anyone or its contents discussed.
I took the key, opened the door between my room and the boudoir as quietly as I could, went to the bureau and unlocked it. The book was lying on top of a leather blotter. I lifted it out reverently, shut the bureau, locked it, tiptoed back to my room and shut the door. I remember how I then sat on my bed with my shirt half off, calculating on the back of my aunt's letter the rough value of her securities. I couldn't also help calculating the commission I should receive on the order that I was already planning to recommend to her. When I finally went to bed, perhaps because I had been sitting there so long in a state of half-undress, my teeth began to chatter. There was nothing for it. I should have to go downstairs and fetch my coat as an extra cover, unless I could find a rug to put on my bed. There were no rugs to be seen in the hall, but at least my overcoat was thick. In the hall, I noticed an ashtray and took that, too. There was none in my room since Aunt Catherine disapproved of smoking. Then I crept upstairs again. I remember noticing that the light was on in my uncle's room at the end of the passage. After that, I slept soundly.
There you are, Malcolm. I was wondering what on earth had happened to you. I suppose you managed to oversleep.
Oh, no, Aunt Catherine. I've been up for hours. In fact, Uncle Hannibal and I have just returned from a trip to the village.
He never asked me if he could have the car.
We didn't go in the car. He ran me down there on his motorbike.
Oh, that vulgar, noisy thing. It's so undignified for a man of his age and position. And why did you go down to the village instead of coming in to see me, as I asked?
I didn't want to disturb you until you'd had your breakfast.
Oh.
And, well, and besides, I wanted to buy the Financial Times and the Investor's Chronicle before we had our chat. Also, I needed a nail brush.
A nail brush?
Well, in the rush, I forgot to pack mine last night.
Well, sit down. Oh, no, not on my bed, on that chair. Throw that book somewhere, anywhere. It's by that man Lawrence. Anne lent it to me. Quite revolting.
Aunt Anne's far from well, I hear.
Well, you know how she worries about her health. Oh, people always come to me with their troubles. When I have troubles, I deal with them myself. There are times, Malcolm, when I find myself longing, just longing, to get away from here and from everyone who knows me. Well, I suppose that'll never be. You got my letter?
Yes, I have it here.
Did you find the book?
Yes, I have it here, too. Oh, and here's your key. I was so excited, you know, Aunt Catherine, that I lay awake for hours.
I hope you haven't excited yourself for nothing. The majority of my investments I want to leave just as they are.
Well, of course, Aunt Catherine. All your important holdings seem, well, absolutely safe.
There are many calls on my income of which you know nothing.
Well, in that case, obviously, security of income must come first.
Yes, yes, of course. You realize, don't you, Malcolm, that your Uncle Morris left me a very rich woman?
Well, I always imagined...
Now, Malcolm, I've taken you completely into my confidence over my affairs. On no account do I want you blabbing about them to anyone else, your Uncle Hannibal least of all. You're such a little gossip.
I know how to behave professionally, Aunt Catherine.
You are my only relative to know what is in that investment book. Now, tell me, Malcolm, what would you do? What prospect should I have if I decided to entrust you with, well, say, £100,000 on my behalf?
Well, I'd like to give the matter a lot of thought, of course. I have some ideas already.
Good heavens, has it gone 11? Oh, I must send off a letter before the midday post. Be an angel and give me that pad on the table over there.
A pad? I can't see any pad.
Are you sure?
Quite sure.
Oh, drat that girl. She must have tidied it away.
Where would she have put it?
God knows. But there's another pad in the bureau, I expect, in my boudoir. Have a look. Here, take the key.
I found a pad in the bureau, and lying on top of it, there was a flat bottle of pink glass. Not unlike a large scent bottle, wrapped round with a pamphlet. Curiously, I couldn't remember its having been there when I fetched the investment book from the same place the night before. The wide neck bore an ornate label with the words Le Secret de Venus in gold letters. What could it be? Rashly, I decided to ask my aunt.
What have you been doing, Malcolm?
I found a pad. And something else, look.
Really, Malcolm? Didn't that expensive education for which I paid ever teach you that it is extremely rude to rummage among other people's treasures? Now, give me that at once.
What is it?
It's a tonic. A very special tonic from France. Contains vitamins and all kinds of other things, too. I meant to take a dose this morning. Give me that glass over there.
Here you are, Aunt.
And the jug, please.
There.
Thank you. I suppose that's about a teaspoon, isn't it? Ah.
Looks like Epsom salts.
You can read what it says on that pamphlet wrapped around it while I dash off my note. I'm not sure, though, that it's really suitable for a boy of tender years. Oh, what a horrible taste. That, as the French say, il faut souffrir pour être belle. What do you think of Dace, huh? A great improvement on that slack old fool Page. Dace was in the Coldstream Guards, you know. Oh. I didn't think it was so bitter. Oh, horrible. Oh! Oh! Oh!
Will you please sit down, Mr. Warren?
Thank you, Inspector.
I'm sorry to have to ask you to go over certain details of your story again, sir, but, well, there's no harm in my telling you. In fact, it's my duty to tell you that tests have now confirmed that, as Dr. Matthews suspected, Mrs. Cartwright met her death through poison.
Poison?
Yes, poison, Mr. Warren. Suspected by the medical gentleman of being oxalic acid, and of having been concealed in a preparation known as Le Secret de Venus.
Oh, how terrible.
Yeah, I was afraid that the news might come as a bit of a shock to you. Now, Mr. Warren, you told us before that when you mentioned your Aunt Anne, Mrs. Carville, the deceased referred to troubles of her own. Now, have you any idea what they were?
None.
Well, nothing to do with money.
Oh, no, no. My Aunt Catherine was a very wealthy woman.
But she said she had many calls on her.
That's right.
What did you take that to mean, Mr. Warren?
I suppose she was alluding to her poor relatives.
Yeah. Did Mrs. Cartwright make you an allowance?
No.
But you had presents from her, money presents.
Yes, at Christmas and on my birthday. Not at other times.
Excuse me if I ask for what amount?
Usually for £100.
Yeah. Suppose these troubles of which your aunt spoke were not money troubles. What could they be?
I've no idea.
I want you now to tell me what opinion you formed of the relations between your aunt and your uncle Hannibal.
I'm not sure that I formed any opinion.
Oh, come, come, Mr. Warren. You do want to help us, don't you? Do you think that in recent months they were getting on as well as before?
Perhaps not quite as well. One can't imagine that husbands and wives live in a perpetual state of bliss.
Oh, I see you take a rather cynical view of marriage. Now then, let's go on to this question of the bottle. Now, you say that you did not see it last night when you opened the bureau.
That's right. But that doesn't mean it wasn't there. I may just have failed to notice it.
And when you saw it this morning, was it full?
Well, I can't be certain. I didn't look that carefully.
Was it you who took out the stopper?
No, my aunt did.
Had she any difficulty in doing so?
None that I saw.
Very well, then, Mr. Warren. I think that's all for the present.
Thank you.
Oh, by the way, as a pure matter of form, would you oblige me by letting me take your fingerprints, sir?
After I had been interrogated, it was the turn of my Uncle Hannibal.
Tell me, Mr. Cartwright, was this bureau of your wife's generally kept locked?
I think so, yes.
How do you mean you think so? Don't you know?
Well, it was my wife's private bureau. I never tampered with it.
Oh, I see. Where did your wife keep the key to it?
In her bag, perhaps. I really don't know.
Well, where did she take it from when she put it in the envelope addressed to your nephew?
I don't know. I wasn't there. I wasn't even sure that it was the key of the bureau.
How did you know it was a key at all?
By the feel of it. Besides, she told me she'd arranged for my nephew to get at the book.
Well, weren't you surprised that your wife didn't give you the book straight out and ask you to pass it on to him?
Not altogether.
Why not?
Well, my wife was always rather secretive, I suppose I might call it, about money matters. She didn't want people to know how much she had.
Not even her husband?
No.
When did you first see the bottle containing the preparation?
When I went into my wife's bedroom with the doctor. At least that's when I might have seen it first.
Now, what do you mean?
Well, I might have seen it when I rushed upstairs on first being told the news. I don't remember seeing it very clearly. I was naturally very much taken aback and, well, shocked by what I found.
Quite so. Can you describe the bottle?
Oh, yes. It was of pink glass with a... rather like a fancy scent bottle with a wide neck and a label with gold writing on it.
How come you can describe it so well if you don't remember seeing it very clearly?
Well, I suppose I must have taken in the details. Or my nephew may have told me what it was like. Or...
Yes?
Well, I did, in fact, see another bottle with the same label this morning.
Oh, you did? Where?
At Bales, the chemist's in Maysbury.
And what were you doing at the chemist's this morning?
Well, I ran my nephew into the town on my motorbike. He wanted to buy some papers, the financial papers. And then he saw the chemist's shop and said that he wanted a nail brush. He went inside and I hung about outside. There were two or three of those bottles in the window.
No, you didn't actually go into the shop yourself?
No, as I told you, I...
So you don't actually know that your nephew did buy a nail brush?
Well, he came out with a white paper parcel.
Yeah, but couldn't this parcel have contained a bottle of the mixture?
Well, yes, I suppose it's just possible.
Well, doesn't it seem to you rather extravagant, buying a nail brush when you're only away for a weekend?
I don't know. Perhaps.
Is your nephew well off?
It depends what you mean. Considering he lives in a smart part of London and has some smartish friends, well, perhaps he isn't.
Is he extravagant?
I don't know. I suppose he spends pretty well all he has. Most young fellows do.
Has he ever asked you for money?
Never. He knows I haven't any to spare.
Or your wife?
I don't think so.
But you're not sure?
Well, she never told me he had. I shouldn't think he would. My wife never liked to lend money. She resented it if people asked her.
Did your wife, Mrs. Cartwright, care for your nephew?
Yes, very much, I should say.
And was he devoted to her?
Well, not devoted, perhaps, but I never saw them getting on badly together.
Well, I think that's about everything for the moment. As a matter of form, do you mind if I just take your fingerprints, sir?
After tea that same day, the inspector summoned me again to my aunt's room. First, he made me go through exactly the same movements that I had made when looking for the pad. How had the bottle been lying in the bureau? How had I picked it up? Next, he was making me use a bottle of scent as a dummy. I had to reenact how I'd given the bottle to my aunt. Had she touched my hand at all? Had she taken the bottle by its neck? Or lower down? In which hand had she held it? Had she difficulty in pulling out the stopper? I couldn't understand why he should be so eager to get all these details exactly right. They seemed pretty unimportant to me. And eventually my impatience proved too much for me.
You know, Inspector, I honestly think I'd be able to help you better if you told me exactly what you're getting at.
All right then, Mr. Warren. I'll be quite frank with you. What we are puzzled about is this. When you handled the bottle just now, you made finger marks all over it, except perhaps within an inch or two of the neck. Now, here's the snag. On the actual bottle, on the bottle containing the mixture, there's no trace of your finger marks at all. Oh, we found Mrs. Cartwright's prints on the stopper and the neck and lower down, but not one, not a single one of yours. Now, that's a little problem that has us puzzled. Perhaps you can explain it.
Well, of course. I've got it. I never touched the bottle containing the mixture at all.
You never touched it? What do you mean, Mr. Warren?
Well, there was this paper wrapper round the bottle, covering the lower part. I should think it went to within an inch and a half of the neck. It was wrapped tightly round, and of course, it was that I touched.
Good Lord. What became of this wrapper?
When my aunt took the bottle by its neck, it slipped out of the wrapper, which remained in my hand.
Well, why didn't you tell us this before?
It seems such a trivial detail. And I suppose I was so upset that, well, I forgot about it.
Well, what did you do with the wrapper, can you remember?
I must have stuffed it in my pocket, because I pulled it out in the drawing room while waiting for Dr. Matthews. And yes, then I put it on the coffee table.
On the coffee table?
Yes, I'm almost sure of that.
Did you mention the wrapper to Dr. Matthews?
Oh, I don't think so. No, it didn't seem important.
Did you mention it to...
To whom?
Well, never mind that now. So, for all you know, the wrapper is still on that coffee table.
Yes.
Well, let's go and find it.
But when we arrived in the drawing room, it was obvious that the wrapper had gone. The inspector nodded at me curtly.
That'll do for the moment, thank you, Mr. Warren.
Through the window of the sitting room, I had already glimpsed Aunt Anne, always a favorite of mine, walking with Uncle Hannibal in the garden. I hurried out to join them.
Poor Malcolm. This must all be dreadful for you.
Yes, I do feel rather shattered. I've just had my third interrogation.
Oh.
But do you think they want me again, too?
They didn't say so. They're conducting a kind of search party.
A search party? What for?
A wrapper that was around that bottle and has now disappeared.
A wrapper?
Well, perhaps I'd better go and see them. One never knows. Well, goodbye, Anne. And thank you for coming to cheer us up.
Goodbye, Hannibal. And try not to worry. Oh, poor Pet. It's all very well to say that to him, but he's always been the worrying kind under that calm manner of his. I sometimes think it would have been far better for him if he'd never met Catherine and got mixed up with us at all.
Aunt Catherine was never very nice to him, was she? Except at the beginning. Sometimes I used to feel quite embarrassed just to hear her tone.
I've telegraphed to Terence. As you've probably heard, he's away fishing in Wales. He'll be glad to have somebody who knows about the practical side of these terrible affairs. In many ways, poor Hannibal is so utterly innocent. Oh, I've wired to Bob, too. I should think he'll catch the train tonight. I'm lucky, I suppose, to have such an extremely efficient husband and son. I can always leave them to cope with things. I'm not a coper at all, and neither is poor Hannibal.
Aunt Anne?
Hmm?
Have you any idea when Catherine could have bought that bottle of hers?
Oh, yes, on Friday morning.
How can you be so certain?
Well, I went to see her that day, very early before I set off for London, and she was full of this quack mixture. Some friends of hers had told her about it. It eliminated wrinkles and brought colour to the hair and, oh, did wonders for one's sex life. She'd seen a bottle at Bales and was going into Macebury to buy it that very morning.
Well, so you knew the stuff was in the house last night?
Hmm.
Do you realise that you may be the only person who knew that?
Hardly. At least one other person must have known it too. The person who used his or her knowledge to do this ghastly thing.
I suppose Dace drove at a Macebury.
That revolting creature. Yes, I suppose he did.
So he would have known?
Yes. Tell me, Malcolm, honestly, how far do you think that the police suspect poor Hannibal?
About as much as they suspect me. We both had splendid chances of doing it, and we both had motives.
Oh, Malcolm.
As long as there are two of us equally under a cloud, I don't think we'd be in a hurry to arrest either. And when one is cleared... Oh, I don't see how either of us can be cleared until the real murderer is caught.
Oh, but that's terrible.
A consciousness of innocence is a great comfort, you know.
I suppose it couldn't have been suicide.
Well, it's physically possible that Aunt Catherine put the poison in the bottle herself, but everything else points the other way.
Do you think I ought to go to the police and tell them what I know?
And sooner or later, they'll certainly ask to see you. And there'll be questions, endless questions, like the ones I've had to put up with.
Well, such as?
Well, did you buy the medicine for Aunt Catherine? Did you visit the house again after your day in London? What do you know about my relationship with Uncle Hannibal and Uncle Hannibal's relationship with Aunt Catherine?
Yes, it'll be tedious, I see. And what am I to say about Hannibal and Catherine? I suppose they imagine that all proper husbands and wives dote on each other.
Well, I should just say that, as far as you know, Uncle Hannibal and Aunt Catherine always got on very well together.
Yes.
I tried to give them a more truthful answer than that, with the result that the inspector accused me of taking a cynical view of marriage. Oh, dear. Tell me, Aunt Anne, do you think that Uncle Hannibal suspects me?
No, of course not. Do you suspect him?
I can understand the police suspecting him.
Yes, but you?
Well, in some ways, I don't see how I can help suspecting him.
Poor Hannibal.
Oh, Aunt Anne, please, don't do that.
Forgive me, Malcolm. I don't know why. I suppose I'm more affected than I thought I was.
Aunt Anne, is everything all right with you?
All right.
Well, I gather you had to see some Harley Street man on Friday.
Oh, yes, that's right. I get very nervous about myself at times, you know that, but... Well, I was reassured. Nothing serious.
I'm awfully glad to hear that.
I've also been worrying about Augusta.
Augusta?
Mm.
Well, she's not ill, is she?
No, not ill. Pregnant.
Well, that's nothing to get worked up about, is it? Or do you dread becoming a grandmother for the first time?
Oh, no. Good gracious, no. But, well, this is the worst possible moment for something like that to happen.
Why?
She and James are in a bad way financially.
I thought he had a lot of money. And didn't Augusta get that legacy from her godfather?
Oh, they both had quite a bit. Once. But he put it into some travel agency in Rome that promptly went and failed. Oh, I'm afraid Terence is right about poor James. He has the reverse of the Midas touch.
Are they still in Italy?
Yes. I'd like to go out to them, but Terence is against it. He thinks I'm far too possessive a mother and ought to leave them to get on with things, but... It's difficult when you keep getting these anguished pleas from your daughter. Oh, I do wish Terence liked James more. But you know how important it is to him that people should be sound.
I don't think Uncle Terence thinks me awfully sound.
In many ways, his view of life is awfully narrow and conventional. Hannibal is different. I suppose if you've served in the Merchant Navy, you acquire a wider view.
You know, Uncle Hannibal never ceases to surprise me.
How do you mean?
Well, when I first met him, I thought him so utterly ordinary. As most people do. But bit by bit, I've come to see that, in fact, he has all kinds of hidden complexities and depths to his character.
Oh, you're so right about that. So right. And as you say, most people never see them.
I wonder if Aunt Catherine did.
Of course not. She never appreciated him, not for a moment. Fancy preferring the company of that awful Dace.
Dace is very handsome.
Well, so is Hannibal, if it comes to that. Catherine would never have married a man who wasn't handsome. Well, I suppose I'd better be setting off for home. Perhaps you'd be a dear and tell the inspector that if he wants a word with me, I'll be in for the rest of the day. I don't feel I can face him just for the moment.
I'll tell him.
Good. Oh, Oh, your belated birthday present is at last almost ready. When you come over, I'll give it to you.
What is it?
Shall I tell you, or do you want it to be a surprise?
Oh, no, tell me. I hate surprises.
Well, I've been binding André Gide's novel, La Porte Étroite. It's a great favorite of mine. I thought you might like it. And I've used this really rather beautiful pale gray Morocco.
Oh, it sounds marvelous. You are clever.
Well, wait until you see it.
The next day was Sunday. I was wandering in the garden after breakfast when I saw my cousin Bob, Aunt Anne's son, coming through the gates.
Bob!
Hello, Malcolm.
I can't tell you how glad I am to see you. I was only saying to Uncle Hannibal at breakfast that it was essential for us to have a solicitor. You and Uncle Terence acted for Aunt Catherine, didn't you?
In most things, yes. But when she wanted to keep something secret from the family, well, you know how she was.
Presumably, you drew up the will.
No, that was done by a little man called Smolt. Quite an able fellow in a way, though hardly out of the handkerchief drawer. As a matter of fact, I've just come on from his office after a little chat. He told me a good deal.
About the will, you mean?
Yes. Well, Catherine apparently made her first will, or rather her first will after Hannibal came on the scene, a few days before her marriage. I gather that in it almost all her money was left to him. That will was revoked some 8 months ago, and Catherine then made a second will in which she was far less generous to her beloved husband. 2 months ago, she made yet another will.
And what were the terms of that?
Far more satisfactory from our point of view. You and I are the executors, and for our trouble, we each get £1,000. After a host of little legacies, you know the kind of thing, the estate is then divided into 10 parts. 3/10 to your mother, 3/10 to my father, 2/10 to charity, and 1/10 each to Hannibal and Augusta.
1/10 to Hannibal? But that's disgraceful. I mean, when death duties and the legacies have been paid...
I had no idea you were so attached to the Carthaginian.
Well, after all, it's only fair that one should pay for one's pleasures. And there's no doubt that the Carthaginian, as you and Uncle Terence chose to call him, was a great pleasure to Aunt Catherine for 18 months after her marriage. And for several months before it. Does Dace get anything?
400. He's the unlucky one. Aunt Catherine evidently thought she was not being generous enough to him and too generous to Hannibal, and on Friday wrote to Smolt to ask him to prepare a new will for her. According to that will, Dace was to get that 1/10 of the estate, and Hannibal nothing whatsoever. She was going to call and sign this new will sometime next week.
Oh, look, there's Hannibal now.
I don't care to speak to that bounder.
Oh, Bob, you must.
Hello, Bob. Your mother said you'd be over sometime this morning.
I've come round in my professional capacity, as representative of Aunt Catherine's solicitor.
I see.
I don't know if all her private papers and money are locked up. If not, they ought to be.
Well, most of her private things were in the bureau in the boudoir. The police have the key of that and of the boudoir itself. There may also be papers in the drawers of her desk in the sitting room.
Locked, I take it?
Yes.
Where's the key?
I think the police must have it.
I should like to be sure that no unauthorized person can gain access to those drawers.
Why the hell are you taking it on yourself to make these arrangements? I should have thought the job was either mine or the police's. After all, I was married to your aunt.
I am here, as a matter of fact, as the executor of my aunt's will.
Are you the only executor?
No. Malcolm's the other, but I'm sure he'll appreciate it if I say that he has no professional status.
Why, you're a bloody conceited idiot!
Would you mind not shouting at me? I'm not used to this kind of ill-bred, vulgar...
Why, you...
Uncle, steady on!
Let go of me, Malcolm, let go of me! He asked for that!
Control yourself. You'll only make things worse.
All right. All right! But he's a bloody runt!
Bob, are you hurt?
My jaw feels stiff. I hope he hasn't broken it. Where is he? Taken to his heels, I see.
You shouldn't have baited him like that. He's naturally very upset at the moment.
Baited him? I was merely attempting to carry out my legal duty. I really think this is a matter to report to the police. We can't have him tampering with justice.
Tampering with justice? How's he doing that?
By not letting me ensure that Aunt Catherine's effects are in safekeeping.
He's done nothing to prevent you. We can go in now, if you like.
I think I've done all I'm called upon to do.
As I passed through the hall, after saying goodbye to Bob, I met Dace.
They've just sent me in again. They don't seem to remember the questions they've asked once already. I feel like telling them that their memories were so bad, they ought to take some notes. It's a rum do, isn't it, sir?
What sort of questions have they been asking?
Well, I suppose it's all right to tell a third party.
Well, don't if you feel you shouldn't.
This bottle of the mistress's. If they'd asked me once, they've asked me 100 times if I'd ever seen it before or seen her buy it. Well, I took her to Bales last Friday, but I was seated in the car waiting for her. So how was I to know what she'd bought herself? There was this parcel, that's all I know, lumpy-like.
And what else did they ask you?
Well, they wanted to know how the master and mistress got on together.
They asked me that, too. What did you tell them?
Well, I thought it better not to mention that they had so many rows. I mean, it might have given the wrong idea, mightn't it? So I just said that I thought they got tired of each other from time to time.
Like most married couples.
Well, I don't know if most married couples go at each other hammer and tongs, as I've heard them doing. And then the inspector asked me if Mr. Cartwright ever gave his wife any cause for jealousy.
And what did you say to that?
Well, I said, not that I knew of. I almost said, why should she be jealous, seeing as how she seemed to have lost her interest in him?
Yes. Well, I'd better rejoin Mr. Cartwright.
You know, sir, I have the feeling they're onto something. Don't ask me why, but I just have that feeling. The first time they questioned me, and the time after that, it was different. But this time, yes, they know something. Something's turned up.
Late that afternoon, my Uncle Terence, Aunt Anne's husband and Bob's father, arrived. I asked him if he wished me to call Uncle Hannibal, but he said that he would like to put some questions to me first. This he did, making me feel as if the inspector were yet again interrogating me. Then, with his usual ponderous manner, he delivered his judgment.
But to my mind, Malcolm, the case is a simple one.
Simple, Uncle Terence?
Yes, simple, Malcolm. I'm afraid there are many homes that seem superficially harmonious and united. But if one looks deeply, all manner of vile complications at once strike the eye.
I don't think I follow you.
Oh, come now, Malcolm. You're not as naive as all that, I should hope. In households where an imprudent and foolish marriage has been made, you know I'm sure what I mean, one may almost always assume that beneath a superficial semblance of agreement, there are bound to be murky patches.
Well, I'm sure that Aunt Catherine and Uncle Hannibal must have had their differences from time to time, but at the same time...
I like your loyalty, Malcolm. It's a quality I've always liked in you. One does not wish, of course one does not wish, to say anything unfeeling about your aunt at a moment like this. But at the same time, I have no doubt at all, that she'd begun to regret her miserable marriage.
I don't know what reason you have for saying that.
Ample reason. I happen to know that she was preparing to revoke her will. She was not one to whom the admission of error came easily. You must have noticed that yourself. But at long last, she had come to see that those nearest to her, your mother included, had been right all along.
My mother and Hannibal have always got on rather well.
We all get on well with a number of people whom we would hardly consider suitable marriage partners for our nearest and dearest. Well, all we can do now is to avenge her death. It will give me the greatest satisfaction. I am not speaking vindictively here. When the guilty person has been brought to justice.
I don't much care for the idea of vengeance, Uncle Terence. But I agree with you completely in hoping that everything will soon be cleared up. If no one we know is involved, so much the better.
No one we know? I'm afraid, Malcolm, you're simply blinding yourself to the facts.
The facts? What are they? That's what I'm continually asking myself, and what the police are no doubt continually asking themselves, too.
I use the words facts rather loosely, I concede. I was referring to 3 important things in a crime of this nature. Motive, opportunity, probability.
By probability, do you mean, well, murderous disposition?
Yeah, that is not the expression I might myself have chosen, but by and large, yes. Now, it's quite clear to me that no member of your family or mine would commit a murder.
That wouldn't count for much in a court of law, would it?
No. I agree with you there. But when we look at the case rationally, unhampered by the rules of evidence, we can, I think, venture certain conclusions. And we are justified in looking for evidence to fit those conclusions.
Well, what conclusions do you mean?
Now, come, Malcolm. If you don't know what conclusions I mean, then I'm afraid that this whole conversation of ours has been wasted. Well, I suppose I'd better toddle along and have a word with the inspector. I have one idea, which I hope to follow up. I hardly expect it to yield any result at this late stage, but no stone must be left unturned.
As I lay in bed that night, my mind began to weave improbable plots. Improbable, but not impossible. Suppose that, by some extraordinary means, Uncle Terence had contrived to enter the house on Friday. Suppose that he had some confederate. Dace was the most likely person. Of course, he would have to have known that Aunt Catherine intended to buy that bottle at the chemist. And then he would have to have substituted a poisoned one for the one that she had bought. Yes. Yes, it was improbable. But it wasn't impossible. The case against Hannibal, on the other hand, was less far-fetched. It was greatly to his interest that Aunt Catherine should die before she had cut him entirely out of her will. She had told him of her purchase of the tonic, and the arrival of his nephew had provided him with the perfect opportunity to shift the guilt onto someone else. Eventually, I could stand the uncertainty no longer. I threw back the bedclothes, hurried into my dressing gown and slippers, and made for my uncle's room. Uncle Hannibal! Uncle Hannibal! Uncle Hannibal, are you asleep?
What the devil? What's going on?
I'll put on the light.
Malcolm! Well, what time is it? Good God, it's 4:20.
I'm sorry, Uncle Hannibal, but I simply have to thrash this whole thing out.
Thrash what out?
This whole business of Aunt Catherine's murder. You realize, don't you, that the police must have 2 chief suspects? Myself and you.
Us?
Well, who else?
It never struck me for one moment that anyone could possibly suppose that you might have...
Look at the facts. Or rather, look at how they might appear to one of those unsympathetic policemen.
I really think you're getting yourself needlessly worked up.
Just imagine how they see me. Now, since living in London, I found my expenses increased with my opportunities for spending. Although I'm not at present in debt, I've been eager for some time to live on a different scale.
Well, we all know that's tosh. You're just not the kind of character who...
We may know, Uncle. We may know, but they don't. So much for motive. Now for opportunity. Supposing I'd managed to obtain some oxalic acid crystals. Well, there's not much difficulty in that. And when I came down this weekend, I brought them with me, just in case I had the opportunity of using them. And then on the evening of my arrival, a magnificent opportunity was presented to me.
Magnificent opportunity? What do you mean?
Well, when I went to the bureau for the investment book, there was the bottle containing Le Secret de Venus. The bottle had already been opened. It was easy to take out the stopper, pour out a little of the preparation into an envelope, since destroyed, and substitute the poison. Well, I had little difficulty the next morning in persuading my aunt to take the dose. The risk of being discovered was slight, as I could admit to handling the bottle and unlocking the bureau.
Ah, really, Malcolm?
Now, let's look at the case against you. You'll admit, won't you, that it was greatly to your interest that Aunt Catherine should die.
It was the last thing I wanted, to die in such a horrible
manner. But if she hadn't died just then... As far as the police are concerned, you had plenty of motive.
I don't care a damn about your aunt's legacy to me.
Well, the police might not credit that. You knew about Aunt Catherine's purchase of the bottle. She told you of it herself. And you knew the bottle was in the bureau of her bedroom. Am I right?
Yes.
You counted on my leaving the bureau key on the dressing table in my room and decided to take it from there while I was asleep. But I made this unnecessary for you by going down into the hall to fetch my overcoat and an ashtray. During this period, it was easy enough for you to slip into my bedroom and take the key.
I must say, you have a very fertile imagination. And what did I do next? Do tell me.
You went into the boudoir as soon as you were sure I was asleep. You put the poison in the bottle and then left it in a conspicuous position on top of the blotter, so that it should not be overlooked by Aunt Catherine or by myself.
And what about the key? How did I get that back into your possession?
Easy. You came into my room early the next morning, remember? To ask me about the time of my bath. I thought that a bit odd. I expected Dace to concern himself with something like that. You then dropped the key when I wasn't looking, onto the handkerchief where I distinctly remember having left it the night before. The position of the handkerchief, of course, was quite lucky for you. It meant you could put down the key without making any sound.
You make me sound far more efficient and far cooler a customer than I am in real life. And then what?
You contrived to be away from the house on Saturday morning so as to avoid being at hand during the administration of the poison.
Yes. I seem to have been very clever. Not at all the bungler that your aunt always accused me of being.
Very clever. Except for one important thing.
One important thing, and what was that?
Your fingerprints. You managed to destroy the wrapper of the bottle when you saw it lying on the coffee table in the drawing room where I'd thrown it. But what you don't know and what you can't know until the police tell you is whether you left any prints on the neck.
You make me look as guilty as hell the way you tell it.
Well, the facts are pretty damaging, Uncle Hannibal. Oh, Uncle Hannibal, please. Please tell me the truth. You are innocent, aren't you?
It's hardly likely that I'd say no if I weren't. But as a matter of fact, I am. Don't you believe me?
Yes. Yes, I do. I do. I just can't imagine. Well, you're not the kind of person. You must admit that a lot of the evidence... It looks as though someone had forged it. I mean to put the blame on you.
Well, I see a good deal's got to come out that I'd preferred to have kept secret.
I suppose there's a woman in it.
Yeah. Yes. You know all about my marriage to Catherine. I suppose she was, well, infatuated with me, and I, though I was never really in love with her, not really. Well, I thought she was fun to be with, and I wanted to settle down after being a rolling stone for so many years, and, well, it seemed that it all might work out. But it didn't. It just didn't. And then, to cut a long story short, there was this housemaid, Jessie Toller. You may remember her.
No, I can't say I do.
She was a rather pretty little thing. Silly, but pretty. But when your aunt dismissed her the January before last, there was nothing, almost nothing between us. Just, well, human companionship, you know. She was lonely. I was lonely. Oh, it's bloody embarrassing to have to tell you all this, Malcolm.
Oh, there's no need to be embarrassed, Uncle.
Well, after her dismissal, she got a job with those business people who bought that large house above the golf course. One day, I saw her walking back to them from the station. Must have been her day off, I think. On an impulse, I stopped and I gave her a lift in my sidecar. I was sorry for the poor little thing. She talked about being overworked and of her mother being ill and of... Well, the upshot was that I arranged to see her again and again until...
She became your mistress.
Yes. We used to walk out on the links. But it couldn't happen more than six or seven times. And then suddenly she changed, overnight as it were. She refused my lift, talked a lot about the danger of not keeping to one's station in life. I never saw her again. It was 4 or 5 days later that the first letter arrived.
Blackmail?
Yes. From her brother, name of Alfred. He said that Jessie was going to have a baby and demanded £200 for nursing expenses and compensation. I could hardly believe it. I'd always been so careful.
What was the address?
Oh, a little tobacconist's near the golf club. The old woman in charge of the place either couldn't or wouldn't tell me anything. But I learned that this brother, this Alfred, he'd been a caddy at the golf club until about 3 months before he'd been sacked for pinching something from someone's locker. No one knew what had become of him since.
You didn't send him the money, I hope.
No, no. I even wondered whether to go to the police.
Aunt Catherine wouldn't have liked that.
Well, that's what I thought. So I did nothing. Until about 10 days later, another letter came.
And what did that say?
I had exactly 1 week to pay up. Otherwise, Catherine would be told. It was 2 days after the arrival of that letter that both the letters vanished.
Vanished?
Yes. From the attaché case in which I kept them locked up. Anyone could have forced the case open with a suitable key or with no key at all.
Do you think that Aunt Catherine...
Well, it was unlike her to do her own dirty work, so I decided that probably Dace had done it for her. He'd suddenly become much more insolent than usual to me. Well... I searched Catherine's bedroom and the drawers of her desk in the drawing room with no success at all. So I decided that probably the letters were in the bureau in the boudoir.
And that means you did take the key from my room.
Yes, you were right about that, absolutely right. I heard you make your way downstairs, and at once I nipped in and found the key and shot out again.
And did you find the letters?
Yes. They were in one of the pigeonholes of the desk. I remember seeing the bottle. One could hardly help seeing the bloody thing. I never did any more than just move it a fraction out of my way when I was searching. I never opened it or tampered with it at all.
And the wrapper?
I never thought about the wrapper. My fingers may have touched it, or they may have touched the neck, or they may have touched both. I honestly can't remember.
I put the wrapper on the coffee table in the drawing room. It's disappeared.
Did you? Well, if it was lying there, I was so dazed that I didn't take it in.
If you didn't remove it, then the question is, who did?
I don't know, Malcolm. I just don't know.
Now, who had the opportunity of taking it? Obviously, I had, but I didn't. You had, but unfortunately, or it may have been fortunately, you didn't. Who else? Any of the indoor staff? At first, it looks as if the person who took the wrapper must have been the murderer.
I suppose that anyone who left Prince on the wrapper must have left Prince on the bureau.
Yes, I should think so. Except, of course, for the assistant of the chemist and Aunt Catherine herself. So if, as I imagine, the murderer has somehow destroyed the wrapper, then the police will have at least three sets of prints on the bureau. Yours, mine, and those of someone still unknown. With no wrapper to rule any of them out by negative evidence.
Well, you've accounted for your prints, and probably they believed you, whereas I lied to them.
Well, you had a good reason for your lies. And when they come out, well, they oughtn't to weigh much against you.
Malcolm, do you think I should make a clean breast of the Jesse business right away?
No. Better to wait until you've seen a solicitor. My own inclination is to suspect Dace of having taken the wrapper, just as we're also pretty certain he stole the letters. But do we suspect him of having poisoned Aunt Catherine?
I should like to.
So should I. Why should he do it?
Does he get a legacy?
Yes. But I happen to know that if Aunt Catherine had lived, he would have got a far bigger one.
And me, much less.
Yes.
That looks bad.
It would be one of life's little ironies if Dace knew nothing about the increased legacy and killed Aunt Catherine before she had time to make it legal. But it seems more likely that he did know about it.
Why do you think that?
Well, if he stole the letters for Aunt Catherine, they were obviously in league together, and she probably told him of her intention to cut you out of her will and reward him handsomely. In which case, I can't for the life of me see why he should murder her.
But if he didn't murder her, then why do you suspect that he took the wrapper? Why should he want it if he was innocent? After all, by taking it, he probably put his own fingerprints on it, and that would be awkward for him if the police got hold of it.
Is it possible that he'd been searching the bureau for something else and so touched the bottle?
Well, I can't imagine what.
Oh, I don't know. I think that's as far as we can go tonight. Perhaps we should try and get some sleep.
Shh. What? Didn't you hear something?
No?
Outside the door. Wait here.
What?
Dace! What are you doing here?
I saw the light, sir, and heard voices. I wondered if everything was all right. Sir.
Quite all right, thank you, Dace.
Oh, well, in that case, sir, I'll go back to bed. Good night, Mr. Cartwright. Good night, Mr. Warren.
Uncle Hannibal and I went to bed soon after, but it was a long time before I slept. How much had Dace heard? Had he taken the letters? Had he also murdered Aunt Catherine? If so, what was his motive? I finally fell asleep towards dawn, and it was after 10 when Dace came into my room.
I thought it best to let you lay as long as you wish to, sir. Should I draw the curtains, or would you prefer...
No. No, please draw them, Dace.
Very good, sir.
Yes, that's fine.
Would you like your breakfast up here, sir?
No, thank you. I'll join Mr. Cartwright. Unless he's had his breakfast.
Mr. Cartwright's gone, sir.
Gone? What do you mean?
Well, Inspector Glaze called about half an hour ago and they went away together. The inspector asked me to ask you to call at the police station at your convenience sometime this morning.
How do you mean Mr. Cartwright went away with the inspector? Was he... Did he take any luggage?
Yes, sir. They went to Mr. Cartwright's room and came down with a suitcase and set off in the inspector's car.
I see. Right. Well, I'll have my bath now. And after that, perhaps you bring up my breakfast for me. And then I'd like to be driven down to the police station.
Very good, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Warren.
Good morning, Inspector.
I hope I haven't put you out by asking you to come here.
No, not at all.
Mr. Cartwright told me that you've gone to bed very late, and so I thought you'd rather sleep on than have me disturb you.
It was very thoughtful of you. Is Mr. Cartwright...
I'm afraid that Mr. Cartwright is now under arrest.
Under arrest?
I'm afraid so. Very good, madam. But I didn't bring you all the way here just to tell you that. No, what I wanted to say is that you're now at liberty to go anywhere you wish, provided that you leave a note of your whereabouts with me, and provided also that you attend the inquest on Mrs. Cartwright at 2:00 tomorrow afternoon.
Am I to take it, then, that you no longer suspect me?
Isn't that rather like asking me whether I've stopped beating my wife, sir?
Well, I was a suspect, wasn't I?
Oh, now, you must remember, Mr. Warren, that the police always examine a case of this nature from the side of facts, not persons. The first facts we struck, well, yes, they did seem to involve you. After all, you were the only person present when Mrs. Cartwright swallowed that fatal dose. But now, well, I may say that now the facts don't point to you at all.
I'm very relieved to hear that.
Of course, we're always on the lookout for new facts. We're never above owning up to a mistake. I can't say where they may lead, but for the present, you're well outside the picture.
Can I see Mr. Cartwright?
I don't see why not. Here, I'll get somebody to take you down.
Hello, Malcolm. How good of you to come.
Hello, Uncle. As soon as I get out of here, I'm going to telephone to my mother's solicitors to send someone down. I don't really think we want Uncle Terence handling your defense.
Oh, God forbid.
Oh, I'm sure we'll be able to straighten things out in no time at all. I hope you're not worrying too much.
Well, it's damned hard not to worry.
You'd probably like something to read. And what about cigarettes?
Oh, I've enough of those for the present. But, Malcolm, I don't want to drag you or anyone else into this mess.
But it's you that have been dragged in.
They haven't turned you out of the house, have they?
Oh, heavens no. But your room's been locked up. I wanted to go and see if it contained all that it contained last night. But I couldn't get in. I suppose if there was something you really needed, they'd let me in under escort.
Yes, perhaps. I'd rather you didn't trouble. I feel I don't want to see the place again, and I'm sure you don't either.
By the way...
Yes?
Have you heard anything more from the vicar's wife?
Maria Hall? Why on earth should I?
I've been a little puzzled by that telephone call.
When did she telephone?
Don't you remember? You can't have forgotten. The night I arrived, on Friday... Just as we were going up to bed.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. No, that was nothing important. Just to ask how your aunt was getting on.
But why did she want to know? As late as that? It's been puzzling me.
I haven't an idea.
Was there any reason for her to suspect that Aunt Catherine might not be well?
Oh, no, no, no. But, as I think I told you, she'd been to tea the day before, and, well, I suppose she might have thought your aunt was not looking entirely herself.
But Aunt Catherine was quite well on the Thursday, wasn't she?
Oh, yes. As far as one could judge. But there's no accounting for the ideas that get into the heads of these old women. Maria is known to be a fusser and a busybody.
I don't think I've met her.
Well, you haven't missed anything.
Sorry, sir. I'm afraid your time's up.
Very well, officer. Sorry, Uncle Hannibal. It seems to be that.
Anyway, it's been a comfort to have this little chat with you.
Try and take things calmly. Everything that we can do will be done. Oh, and we'll get you out of here in no time at all.
Well, I hope to God you're right.
As I was escorted away from the cell, I was still thinking about Maria Hall. Why did she telephone? And had it in fact been her who had called? The bell had rung and my uncle had spoken. I had not been in a position to hear the voice at the other end. When Hannibal had sworn his innocence to me, he had, well, God knows why, at once convinced me. But when he had said, refusing to meet my gaze, that yes, of course, he remembered a call from Maria Hall, somehow I knew that he was lying. I was filled with a sudden excitement. Clearly, he had a clue in which I did not share. Dace was waiting for me by the car.
And how was Mr. Cartwright?
As well as could be expected in the circumstances.
It's all very odd, isn't it, sir? I'd never have thought. The inspector's just had me in there for questioning again.
When? Now?
Yes, after he'd done with you, sir.
What did he want to know?
Well, nothing new, really. Just going over the same old ground. All about my driving the mistress down to the chemist's on Friday and whether I could be absolutely 100% certain that she came out with a parcel.
You said yes?
Yes. Well, I saw her with a parcel. But what was in the parcel, well, it was all wrapped up, you see. And then the inspector asked me again about the quarrels between the master and mistress. Is it home now, sir?
Yes. No. Now, hang on a moment. Is there a public library in Macebury?
A public library? Oh, no, sir.
Well, where would be the nearest?
In Rothbury, sir.
Well, let's go to Rothbury.
Well, it's nearly 1 o'clock, sir.
Well?
Well, I was thinking about your luncheon, sir.
That'll have to wait.
Very good, sir.
Even while I've been talking to Dace... It had suddenly come to me that Hannibal must be shielding someone. And I thought I had a pretty good idea who that someone was. But first, I had to do a little research in the public library at Rothbury. I wonder if you could...
Would you be so good as to lower your voice? This is a reading room.
I'm sorry. I wonder if you could show me where the medical reference section is. There's something I want to look up.
Over there, in the far left-hand corner, second and third shelves. It's quite clearly marked.
Thank you. I found the shelves and ran my eyes along them until I found the book I wanted. Here we are. Forensic medicine. Now, let's see. OOX, oxalic acid. One of the oldest known organic acids. Oxalic acid is very poisonous, and by reason of its great similarity in appearance to Epsom salts, it's been very frequently mistaken for this substance with, in many cases, fatal results. Ah, here we are. It is frequently used as a photographic developer and in leatherwork. What I discovered there took me straight round to Aunt Anne's and straight into some advice from Uncle Terence.
Frankly, Malcolm, without, of course, wishing in any way to criticize your motives, I must say I think you've taken up rather a misguided attitude in this affair.
Misguided? How do you mean, Uncle Terence?
It was, I have no doubt, a generous motive that led you to leap to Cartwright's defense, visiting him this morning and getting him a lawyer and so forth. But I may tell you, speaking as a lawyer myself, the case seems to me to be conclusive. Absolutely so.
Conclusive? I really can't agree with you.
I dare say you're unaware that one little piece of evidence hitherto wanting has now been supplied.
What piece of evidence?
Hannibal's fingerprints have been found on your aunt's bureau and on the neck of the bottle from which she drank the fatal poison.
There's a reason for that. A reason that has nothing to do with murder. He went to the bureau and may have touched the bottle while he...
Yes?
For the moment, I'd rather not say anything further without Uncle Hannibal's permission.
It strikes me as rather odd, Malcolm, that you should prefer to take sides with this intruder against your own flesh and blood. I'm sure your mother would agree with me. You realize, don't you, that when the sentence is eventually pronounced, you'll be seen in a very ugly light if you persist in aiding Hannibal's defense.
I happen to believe that Uncle Hannibal is innocent.
A somewhat eccentric belief. Well, look at the facts, dear boy. Just look at them. Let me give you some idea of how tomorrow's inquest will go. First, you will be called and fully examined as to your story. From some little hints that have been dropped, I gather that your evidence to the police is by no means entirely favorable to Hannibal. Next, the two doctors will give their testimony. Death by poisoning, oxalic acid. The family and perhaps Dace will give evidence of Catherine's state of mind, so making suicide most unlikely. The shop assistant will next testify to the purchase of the bottle on Friday. And the inspector and the fingerprint men will say how they found Hannibal's prints on the bureau, inside the bureau, on the blotter, and on the neck of the bottle. They may also call Smoke to prove that he had instructions to alter her will, thus supplying Hannibal with his motive. Now, what is your reply to all that?
Uncle Terence, may I please speak to Aunt Anne, alone, as soon as possible?
She's lying down.
Well, then, may I go up to her?
Won't it wait? I hardly think she'd welcome an intrusion. She has a migraine.
I'd prefer to speak to her at once. To get it over.
Malcolm, I heard that you were here. I was just coming down to ask you for news of Hannibal. I feel so desperately worried about him. You don't think... I mean, it isn't conceivable, is it? I just don't believe that...
Neither do I, Aunt Anne. Uncle Hannibal is shielding someone.
Shielding someone?
I'm sure of it. Someone else's fingerprints are on the wrapper of that bottle. Uncle Hannibal took the wrapper, probably he destroyed it. And without that wrapper, well, all the rest of the evidence points to him. Except that...
Yes?
Tell me, Aunt Anne, do you use much oxalic acid for your bookbinding?
So you've guessed.
Yes, I've guessed. And I've guessed right, haven't I?
But how did you possibly...
Well, as I said, I realized that if Uncle Hannibal were innocent, as I was certain he was, then obviously he was shielding someone. And it seemed to me that the most likely person for him to wish to shield
Was me?
Yes. You've been having an affair, haven't you?
Do I have to answer that?
Well, it's not really necessary. I think I knew from the first moment that I saw the two of you together on the morning of Aunt Catherine's death. And then, after Uncle Hannibal had left us both together, there was something about the way that you spoke about him.
Yes, Malcolm, you're right. We became lovers, about 5 months ago.
And you killed Aunt Catherine so that he could be free and have some money of his own?
Oh, no. No, it was because of Augusta and James. I was desperate about them.
You mean James's financial troubles?
Yes. I had to lay hands on 300,000 francs if he wasn't to go to jail.
To jail? I'd no idea it was as bad as that.
Yes, he's committed some kind of fraud. Oh, I'm sure he'd no idea what he was doing, poor boy. You know how feckless he is.
And Uncle Terence refused to help.
I don't have to tell you how he disapproved of the marriage and of their decision to live out of England. And James never made any secret of finding poor old Terence pompous and silly. So when I approached Terence, well, Augusta was too terrified to do so herself. His only reaction was to tell me to let James stew in his own juice.
So you then approached Aunt Catherine?
Yes. As you know, I have no money of my own. But though she was full of advice, most of it highly critical of James, she wouldn't lift a finger either. It was good, she said, for that young man to learn a lesson.
300,000 francs, let me see that. It's about 2,500 pounds, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, God, how mean of her. She must have about 100 times that sum in the bank.
I couldn't have poor Augusta exposed to that kind of scandal, particularly at a time when she was pregnant. James was given 4 weeks in which to raise the cash.
When did you decide that murder was the only way out?
On Thursday. The day before it happened. I'd been to tea with Catherine. Maria Hall was there. After Maria left, I again begged for a loan, but Catherine was adamant. I'm sick and tired of beggars, she said. Then she said that I wasted far too much money on seeing doctors about imaginary ailments and advised me to take this tonic, this new tonic that had been doing such wonders for her.
You mean she already had a bottle on the Thursday?
Yes. She told me to take a look at it in the bureau and then promised to buy me a bottle the following day. That was the bottle she got from the chemist's here. The other bottle had come from London.
And you put the oxalic acid in the bottle on the Friday?
Yes. I went to see Catherine again and asked if I could have a dose of this mixture to try. She was in bed. I said I'd put some of the crystals in an envelope and take them home with me. She gave me the key to the bureau, and after that, well, it was all plain sailing.
You'd brought the oxalic acid crystals with you?
That's right. I emptied out some of the crystals in the bottle, and then I replaced them with those that I'd brought.
And yours was the telephone call that was supposed to have come from the vicarage, from Maria Hall.
Yes. By Friday night, I expected to hear news of Catherine's death. When no word came, I couldn't resist ringing up the house.
Hannibal must have removed the other bottle, the one Aunt Catherine brought for you on Friday, from the chemist in the village.
Yes. And that gave me an alibi. The police assumed that that bottle, the second bottle, was the one in which the poison had been placed. And of course, I'd not been near the house since its purchase.
And Hannibal also destroyed the wrapper with your prints on it.
I suppose so.
So he knew?
Yes, he knew. He must have known, must have guessed. And he decided to take the blame. But I can't let him. I can't let him. It's so brave of him, so unselfish, but I can't. I can't let him do it.
Do you want to come to the inspector with me?
I've not slept a wink since I realized that he was the one that they suspected. And now they've actually arrested him and everything looks so black. I've written out a confession, Malcolm. It's here in my desk. I've written it all out, everything I've told you, and I've signed it. I can't allow Hannibal to do this for my sake. He's such a fine man. And you were clever enough to see that. Whereas Terence and Bob, with their silly snobbery and prejudice. Here, let me give it to you. It's here in the bureau. It's just here.
Aunt Anne! Don't do that! Don't!
At the inquest on Aunt Anne a few days later, Uncle Terence had to go into the witness box and give evidence about his son-in-law James's business affairs. It was all very painful.
Mr. Carville, was the deceased, your wife, right in thinking that you intended to turn your daughter adrift if your son-in-law failed to extricate himself from his financial difficulties?
Oh, no, good God, no.
But you had shown yourself unsympathetic to your daughter's troubles.
I'm afraid I must have done. I had no sympathy with my daughter's husband. If she'd left him, of course, if she'd been thrown on her own resources, well, then I might have stepped in. But I... Forgive me.
At this point, Uncle Terence broke down, and his pale green eyes filled with tears like little glass beads. I must say, I couldn't feel much sympathy for him. In a very real sense, he was the villain of the piece. As for Hannibal, it was touch and go that the police didn't charge him with complicity. But he never admitted to them that he had destroyed both the second bottle and the wrapper on the first, and they lacked the necessary evidence. I suppose that if they'd known that he'd been Aunt Anne's lover, things might have gone worse for him. As it was, he had to explain how his fingerprints had got on the bureau and the neck of the bottle. And so the whole story of Jesse and the blackmail attempt came out.
You know, I always had a hunch that those letters that were supposed to come from Jesse's brother were really from Dace. They had a double purpose. They were intended to extract money from me and at the same time to make trouble between me and Catherine.
I suppose he'll get a pretty stiff sentence.
Well, the inspector seems to think so.
It's pretty brazen to get a girl with child and then to attempt to blackmail someone else for having been responsible.
Yes. How outraged Catherine would be if she were alive and knew the truth. She could forgive him the blackmail, I dare say, but not an affair with Jesse under her nose.
And all the time she was convinced that he had eyes for no one but her. It's rather pathetic when you come to think of it.
Catherine was never pathetic, never for a moment.
No, she certainly wasn't. Tell me, Uncle Hannibal, if Aunt Anne had let you take the blame, would you... Well, could you have seen it through?
I don't know. I just don't know. I suppose I might have produced the wrapper and the bottle to get myself off the hook. I don't know, Malcolm. I loved Anne very much.
I think you'd have gone through with it. You're that kind of man.
Well, at least Augusta and James are safe. Anne would like to know that. Terence has lent Augusta some money until her legacy comes through, and that's bailed James out of his present mess.
Uncle Hannibal.
Yes.
What are you going to do with your money when it gets to you?
Well, the first thing will be to get away from this place and all the gossip. I have a pal retired from the Navy out in Biarritz. We thought we might buy a garage together. And what are you going to do with your money?
Well, I've got this red-hot tip. Oh? Australian mines. Now, there's a packet to be made. Why don't you come in with me?
No, Malcolm, no. I'd always rather be safe than sorry.
Well, I lost most of that investment. I didn't make much success of being my aunt's favorite nephew. And I haven't made any success at all of my career as a broker. So far. Perhaps I ought to be a detective. I might be rather more successful at that.
In Death of My Aunt by Francis King, adapted from the novel by C.H.B. Kitchin, you heard David Griffin as Malcolm and John Shrapnel as Uncle Hannibal. Aunt Catherine was played by Betty Huntley Wright and Aunt Anne by Eva Haddon. Dace was played by Michael McLean, the Inspector by Stephen Thorne, Bob Carville by Jeffrey Beavers, and Terence Carville by Rolf Lefevre. Production was by Piers Plowright.